Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Happy Monday, everyone, if it is a happy Monday. Today we mark two media events, one in the old media, one in the new. Friday was the fifth anniversary of YouTube. Did you know that? And all weekend we've been collecting your suggestions for the best YouTube video ever, at least so far. And on our website right now, we have a Brian Lehrer Show mashup of the first 5 years of YouTube with a tilt toward the newsy, but a dash of Charlie Bit My Finger and some other things thrown in. And later in the show, we'll talk about how our politics, our culture, even our democracy have all changed as a result of the open platform where anyone can broadcast a video, not just the major networks. And again, if you want to see our mashup, you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show for that five-minute video. But right now, something very old-fashioned is making a comeback in old media in New York, a newspaper war. Back in the day, newspapers used to try to kill each other off for fun and profit. These days, they are dying quite nicely on their own, thank you, of natural causes. But today, April 26th, marks a comeback of the newspaper war in New York as the Wall Street Journal has launched its first ever Metro section. From a business standpoint, the goal is to knock off the New York Times in New York. The Journal sells more papers nationally, but the Times does around here. The goal journalistically, well, let's find out. We have a page on our website for your reader reviews of day one of the Wall Street Journal's Greater New York section. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to write down what you think. And here on the air, we'll take your calls. And we'll talk to Chris Smith from New York Magazine, who's checking it out, and also to our own business reporter, Ilya Meritz from the WNYC Newsroom. And we want you to call us up with your reviews of or a question about the Wall Street Journal local section on day one. So if you've read it, have anything to say, our lines are open for your reader reviews of the Wall Street Journal Greater New York section on its first day, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call us right up. And I'm going to take a couple of minutes right now to go through it and tell you what I'm seeing. On page one of the Greater New York section, we have what appears to be an exclusive lead story about Port Authority police searching the car of would-be terrorist Najib Ulazizi at the George Washington Bridge last year, but failing to find the explosives he was carrying and waving him through. Also, New York State considering emergency short-term borrowing to get through the spring, the first time since the early 1990s. There's a lovely little piece about a rat infestation on the Upper East Side. If you live on East 93rd Street between 1st and 2nd Avenues, in fact, your block is here on page one by name. And a story about the first two floors for sale in one of New York's most expensive buildings, 666 Fifth Avenue, asking price $600 to $700 million. And there's a big photo from yesterday's Yankee game also on page one. So we have the Upper East Side, the swanky 666 Fifth, and government debt leading the way, sounds like the Wall Street Journal, along with the terrorism revelation and a dash of Yankee baseball, all on page one. Deeper into the section, they get a little deeper into the city with IS 228 on Avenue S in Brooklyn getting a big math grant, though they don't say where in Brooklyn IS 228 is. It is on Avenue S. And fears of crime increasing in Harlem in one article. But right back from there to Christie's offering art storage in Brooklyn and financial problems at the Mark Hotel. There are some arts pages, including a review of Promises, Promises, and more Christie's in a piece about an auction house turf war in Midtown. Nothing about the newspaper turf war. And there are some sports pages with a few articles, but no stats. But a feature about how long the Yankees take to round the bases in their home run trots. Not surprisingly, A-Rod milks it the longest, despite his long legs. Those are the only stats I saw. There's a business story about the owners of the Giants and Jets in their forced marriage at their new stadium in the Meadowlands, and the debut of a column by a writer named Jason Gay, not Jason Bay, Mets fans, in which he jokes that as a Wall Street Journal sports writer, you will find him at Citi Field tonight interviewing the Mets right fielder about the Lehman Brothers examiner's report. And that's about it. So I think you get the picture. On day one, at least, mostly local topics of upscale concern with an orientation toward business, running through the articles in news, sports, arts, and entertainment. So let's talk about it right now with a couple of local journalists whose organizations probably have no real stake in the new local news war. We decided not to go to the Times, the Daily News, or the Post for this. Not a daily newspaper is New York Magazine, where Chris Smith is political columnist. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Brian.
And in a few minutes, our own Ilya Meretz will join us from the official launch event up, I guess, at Wall Street Journal headquarters or wherever they're doing it. We will find out. And again, listeners, we are inviting your reader reviews of the Journal's Greater New York section here on its debut day. Call us if you've read it and have any impressions or questions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, Chris, I wouldn't want to judge any new media enterprise too much by its content on day one. I hope no one judged this show too much on its first day. But to my eye, they were trying to make a statement, targeting their target audience in pretty identifiable ways, as I was describing, at least to my eye. Anything to add about the content today from your take?
Sure. You're exactly right. If you are the Wall Street Journal with a long history of financially based reporting, and second, if your declared mission is to go after the Times' audience, yeah, you're going to have a Upper East Side, upscale orientation. That said, I think they do a pretty good job of trying to combine some high and low. You know, that there are cops and robbers stories here. Even if the rats are Upper East Side rats, they're rats. You know, it's a gritty kind of story. I think,
and they've got a good angle there,
yeah,
which is the drilling for the Second Avenue subway tunnel, stirring up the rats and making them scatter into people's apartments.
Sure.
Nevertheless, we'll see over time if they discover that there also are many rats in other neighborhoods in New York.
Two disclaimers. Anything that employs more journalists is good, you know. Second, all of us make tons of mistakes. And, you know, pointing out someone else's, I'm always wary about that. But it's the first day, and there's things I like and things I dislike in what they seem to have done. You hit on something immediately that I thought was very smart. Even the people with kids in the school system, the public school system, as mine are, the numbers are often inscrutable. So just naming it IS-228, it gives you very little orientation. You said, is correct, Avenue S, basically Gravesend is the neighborhood. More colloquially, people know the school as Booty. Is the mm-hmm. the common, you know, in the system kind of name. You know, a touch, something they could have added. Also,
right, which gives the sense, again, and I completely agree, not to be too critical of other journalists' little mistakes, especially on day one of something, but it kind of makes Brooklyn, all of Brooklyn, seem out there somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know if this is intentional, but it's something that struck me. They seem to be trying to have a forward-looking orientation, which is good. You have Jacob Gershman's story talking about the borrowing that may be done in Albany. You also have two stories by Michael Saul, the veteran City Hall reporter, one of which talking about Bloomberg's SALT initiative, picking up some corporate backing. I thought, you know, anticipating what people are going to be covering or what's mm-hmm. going to be happening throughout the week.
Michael Saul, formerly the City Hall Bureau Chief at
correct.
The Daily News.
Yeah.
And they even picked up a prominent Wall Street Journal a Village Voice reporter, as I think Russ in Upper Manhattan wants to comment on. Russ, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, Brian. Well, you know, the Village Voice is known for its hip counterculture, kind of explosive language that doesn't fit with the gray ladies' vocabulary and or the Wall Street Journal. So picking up Sean Gardner really put strong investigative power into that newspaper, because The Voice has, of course, Tom Robbins, Wayne Barrett, Graham Raymond. And I think, you know, the Times has Russ Buettner, who's a fabulous investigative reporter, along with Bill Rashbaum, which they picked up. So I think that they're going to aim for some of the counterculture, baby boomer, more hip readers, but they've got to change their language. They've got to get past grayness and dullness and the usual journalistic norms.
Russ, I'm going to leave it there and get some other voices on. Thank you. Sean Gardner, you know
him? Only by reputation, good reporter. Yeah, I think that's a wise hire. A couple of things that I would go further with in some of their stories. You know, it's hard on a daily basis, but they obviously put a lot of preparation into this debut. You know, there could be some more context. The big lead story, the Zazi story, you know, whether or not he was searched and they missed the explosives. If you read between the lines, this is an NYPD, you know, swipe at the Port Authority. You know, Ray Kelly is very, very good, long has been, at the sort of bureaucratic interagency back and forth. And if you read the sourcing and the orientation of this story, you know, the facts may be entirely correct, but it's placing the blame on the Port Authority cops. And, you know, the NYPD has certainly an interest in that kind of orientation.
You think Ray Kelly has his fingerprints on this, though not named? Actually, I was interested in the lack of sourcing in the first paragraph of that story, and it is an interesting story. It's certainly worthy of a page one. Police let terrorists slip through is the headline about, as we said before, Port Authority police inspecting the car of Najibullah Zazi as he was driving over the George Washington Bridge one day last year before his arrest and apparently failing to find explosives in his car that were there. But the first paragraph of this article does not source it at all. It just states it as a fact. Port Authority police were told to stop and search would-be subway bomber Najibullah Zazi's car last September as he drove up to the George Washington Bridge, but waved him across without finding 2 pounds of explosives hidden inside. It doesn't say, according to court records, according to documents released by sources at the NYPD, just states it as a matter of fact, which surprised me.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice. Another thing, too, and, you know, New York Magazine, we often get accused of skewing towards an upper middle class or upscale audience ourselves. But I was struck by a column that talks about how to use Metro cards, which really seemed written for the town car crowd. You know, oh, those wacky subway riders, you know, how come they can't figure out how to use the turnstiles?
How to swipe.
Yeah.
About the art of swiping a subway card, a Metro card. Ed in Brooklyn is going to make, I think, a fair point. You know, I said we're going to bring on Ilya Meretz, our own Ilya Meretz, in a minute, who is, of course, a business reporter at WNYC, and we're talking about this. Chris Smith from New York Magazine, no connection to either party in the newspaper war between the Times and the Journal. But Ed's going to point out something that didn't even occur to me about our own connection. And Ed, fair enough. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to say that I guess on in the morning show, there's the show called The Takeaway on AM. And that show is co-produced by the New York Times. And to critique the Wall Street Journal in the as a competing newspaper to the New York Times, I guess it should be revealed that there could potentially be a bias. Although I have to say, all the critiques I've heard so far, it's very balanced. I just wanted to put that out there.
Ed, thank you. And it's fair enough. And honestly, it didn't even occur to me. It's so far away from what I do and from what I'm thinking about. But it is fair enough. It's not co-produced. They call it an editorial partnership with the New York Times and the BBC World Service. Produced by WNYC, Public Radio International, and WGBH Boston. But fair enough to point that institutional relationship between the New York Times and The Takeaway.
Yeah, and I'll use it as a segue, because we are focusing on what the Journal has done in its new New York section, but you have to also look at it in context with its competition. I thought it was interesting, maybe just random, but the Times had two pretty strong stories that they played up in the past day or two, maybe in anticipation of the Journal's debut.
What?
But you had the Spitzer criticizing Cuomo story, which deservedly got a lot of attention yesterday. And today you have Bloomberg's Bermuda hideaway on the front page, which, you know, makes a splash and is a well-reported, well-written story. Is that timed, you know, to fight back at the Journal and show that the Times can play in that same field? Maybe so.
Chris Smith, political columnist for New York Magazine, with us as we talk about The Wall Street Journal's Greater New York section debut today, and WNYC business reporter Ilya Meretz also joins us now. He has just left the launch event for this section at the Plaza, the former home of the, well, it's the Plaza at Fifth Avenue and 59th Street. Right, Ilya?
It's not a hotel anymore, Brian.
That's right. I say the Plaza building, and I see you heard me having to hold my tongue back from saying hotel.
It feels very uncomfortable to just say the Plaza, but I think that's how they like to be known.
So what was this like?
My read on it was that this event was very much geared to advertisers. I walked in sort of expecting to see Chris Quinn or maybe Michael Bloomberg or John Liu or, you know, one of our citywide elected officials. But there were pretty much no recognizable faces there, with a lot of men in suits and some women. Fresh squeezed orange juice, bagels with salmon, with one chive placed on each bagel. A very upscale, nice crystal chandelier kind of event. And four journal executives kind of took the stage in succession. The first two with Australian accents, which I thought was interesting. Of course, New York is such an international city. I don't know anybody really notices the accents. But
Murdoch's top editors at the New York Post are also Australian.
A few of them are, in any case. Robert Thompson, who spoke for the longest, is.
You know, I heard you this morning on The Takeaway talking about how the target audience may actually be women because that's who the newspaper advertising base is. And it was interesting to me, after hearing you say that, look at not just the news content but the advertising content in the Journal's Greater New York section today. And the biggest ads are full-page women's clothing ads for Macy's and Bloomingdale's. But there's also a DKNY men's clothing ad, a Rolex watch ad. Maybe the women do that shopping too. And I was also struck by how upscale some of the advertising was. There's a real estate ad for apartments with great views at the Rushmore at 64th and Riverside, apartments that the ad mentions start at $3 million. Maybe women do that shopping too, Ilya. But what do we learn from the ads?
I can tell you from this conference, from this launch breakfast, the executives were playing up their reach with women. They were talking about how in the past year the Journal had become the widest, had surpassed USA Today to become the widest read paper in the country, and that they now have more female readers than the Times. The Times has about half the circulation nationwide, so that shouldn't be too surprising, but they obviously thought that was a pretty big deal. I'm still waiting for those. Is it Saks that does those kind of very retro pencil drawings that sort of look like fashion designer sketches? I didn't see any of those in today's Journal Greater New York section. So I guess when I see that is when I'll really believe that they have started to steal ads from the Times.
That's funny. But, you know, the Times Metro pages, by contrast today, have very little advertising at all. One for writers' events at Barnes & Noble, a New York, New Jersey Own Your Own Business Expo, and one for the Visiting Nurse Service of New York. So it's not exactly Rolex and $3 million apartments. I don't know if it means anything.
I don't know quite enough about the ad business to tell you the pathway of those ads to the papers. But the Wall Street Journal always had very upscale ads, just that they trended more towards, cars and golf resorts and things like that. And you know, now they'll be going after high-end jewelers and clothing retailers and such.
Chris Smith, any observation? Let me get Chris Smith back in here on this, Chris.
Yeah, not exactly directly related, and not to gender stereotype anyone. There are plenty of women sports fans for sure. But I noticed in the sports coverage two interesting things. This may be completely a product of deadlines, but the Mets game ended basically around 11 o'clock last night. There's not
with
a word. Right.
Yeah.
There's not a word about that in here. I don't know what they're going to do. If they've got the Yankees from the afternoon in here, but, you know, can they cover night games? Second, everybody has their own style, their own copy style, but it drives me nuts to see athletes are referred to as Mr. Vasquez. You know, it's just
the super formal style. Does the Times still do that?
No.
They gave that up
for
the sports section. I do notice that Murdoch's other paper, the New York Post, does have the Mets' victory right on the front page. Amazon's reign supreme, because it was a rain-shortened game. Sweep Braves. I will point out, Ilya, and I wonder if this came up at all in the event, where the journalists had a chance to ask a question around these lines. Of course, Murdoch does own the Post as well as the Wall Street Journal, and their page one story about cabbies who avoid easy pass lanes to jack up their fares, different content that was in the Journal local section. Right inside, some hardcore Albany politics, the Pedro Espada investigation causing Andrew Cuomo to delay announcing his run for governor, reportedly, and Elliot Spitzer taking it on the knuckles from other state Dems for criticizing Cuomo for allegedly being soft on financial giants and maybe not having the stomach to pick political fights with powerful special interests, kind of criticizing Spitzer's criticism that was in the Times. And on the cover, on page one, the Post does have people stories about Michael Douglas's son and, quote, what to wear on boob quake day. That is on page one of the Post in the upper left. So the Post is still the Post. But Ilya, what about the Post? Have you gotten the chance to ask whether they're going to share resources? For example, Fred Dicker, their state editor, is a high impact New York State journalist. Are they going to share any of that content or personnel?
They didn't get asked that at the conference, so I don't know. The questions came mostly from advertisers, I think, mostly the people in the audience who are much more interested in reach. You know, are you going to be covering the northern suburbs? And, you know, they were reassured, yes, we understand Metro North and we know what the towns up there are. One of the cameramen, sort of back where I was huddled, recording sound, had asked me, are they going to share resources with the Times? So obviously, with the Post. He was interested. But just looking at this paper, as you were saying, it feels very different from the Post. It looks very different. And I'm not sure they're even going to share that many advertisers, because if you look through the Post, you do see, you know, quite a lot of laser hair removal and I think lower end kind of stuff. And I'm not sure, I know that they have tried this, but I'm not sure that they're going to be able to sell ad packages to Tiffany's and say, you know, we're going to put you in the Post and we're going to put you in the Journal. I'm not sure that advertisers will go for that.
Well, based on day one, I will be following the sports columnist Jason Gay to see if he continues to be funny, because, sometimes sports coverage is humorless. And he did write things like, goes without saying, but this column will be primarily dedicated to New York area fox hunting and squash. On occasion, it will cover fringe sports, like that science experiment with a basketball in Madison Square Garden. So at least he's got a little self-referential, deprecating humor there about the Wall Street Journal's place in the world. Just tell me one more thing, if either of you know it, because the Times gave up its standalone Metro section for business reasons. It's now in the back of the A section. Does the Journal plan to keep its Greater New York section as a separate section, or is that just a first-day promotion? Chris, do you know?
I don't know. I think the choice of name, though, Greater New York, is interesting because it is.
I like it, actually.
Yeah, well, it's a play, I think, to the suburban advertisers and readers. To me, though, I think it has a feel of, if you go to Dallas or, one of those sprawling places where they refer to, the Tri-County or, whatever it is. It seems less city by calling it Greater New York.
Here in the Quad Cities.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yes, but curiously, I didn't see any really outside New York stories that I'm recalling, right? I didn't see anything that was, targeted at Stanford or what? Sorry, Ilya, what?
I think there was one Chris Christie story in there, wasn't there?
That was the Times.
That was the Times today.
Oh, that was the Times. Yeah.
So, I'm going to look for things from Milburn and things from Stanford and Greenwich and so forth and Westfield. But we'll see over time. Anyway, day one of the Wall Street Journal. And as we said earlier, don't judge any content of a daily news type on day one too much, but the Wall Street Journal out with its first local news section today and clearly establishing itself as going for certain target audiences, to be sure. WNYC business reporter Ilya Meretz, Chris Smith, political columnist for New York Magazine. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the new movement against gerrymandering and why it matters. Stay tuned.